Welcome to the Franco Podcast. Welcome to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie Podcast. I interviewed 8 bilingual or multilingual people for this year's podcast, including Callie Linz. Callie lives in Nelson and is the executive director of BC Arts Organization. She has a background in dance and theater. Here's our conversation. My first question for you is, what do you think the value of speaking more than one language is for you?
Sure. I really like that question. And I'm actually going to defer to the brilliant playwright Thompson Highway and some comments that he made recently. I think he did the 2023 Massey Lecture. And it's all on CBC Ideas podcast as well. He did a version of them there. But I love what he said about speaking 3 languages. He may speak more than that, but he was speaking specifically about Cree, English, and French. And he said, you know, English is very much the language of the mind, of science. It's a very rational language. For him, it was the language of the head. And he was talking about French being the language of the heart and how many people talk about French as la langue d'amour. And he really felt like that creative expressive side is so well captured in French. And then he said, Cree is the language of the stomach. He said, when you're in a mix of people speaking Cree, there's just so much laughter. It is such a... Just such a full body experience speaking and living in Cree. And he has such love for that language. And I just thought, what a really brilliant way of touching on the different affects and the different sensations of living within different languages. I truly feel like a different person when I'm speaking French versus when I'm speaking English. There's different facets that come out, I think, in different languages. So I really think just being in touch with those different facets of yourself and being in touch with different ways of thinking, I think it shifts the way that you look at the world when you force yourself to frame it differently in a different language.
When did you start to learn French and how did that progress for you?
I guess it started in, oh goodness, when do we start learning French here in elementary school, I suppose? And I really wanted nothing more than to be in French immersion. And I actually was denied my request by my family. I was primarily raised by my grandparents. I was a bit of an odd kid in that I've always been particularly interested in federal politics. So, you know, here in Canada, it's a very bilingual space. And I begged my grandma to request that I enter French immersion. I think it was from grade 7 onwards. And, you know, given the era that she grew up in, she looked at me and she said, school is hard enough in one language. Why in the world would you want to do it in 2? And she said no. And I was just absolutely gutted. I cried for a week. You know, it's very dramatic about it. I'm a theater person by, you know, by passion and training. So I was very dramatic about it all. She eventually caved and got me on the waiting list, but I never was able to enter, unfortunately. But I had a fantastic French teacher in high school at Stanley Humphreys in Castlegar. And I did the J'explore program, which is a wonderful program that's funded, I believe, through the federal government. And they take Anglophones and bring them to small towns in Quebec. And there's an exchange both ways. And you do a significant immersion experience over the summer. You take French courses through local universities. So I was very grateful to spend a summer in Trois-Pistes, Quebec. And that was sort of the start of really enjoying being immersed in the language. And then, of course, I went to McGill when I graduated from high school, and that's an Anglophone university, and most of my studies and, you know, my life on campus was in English, but I was so passionate about being out in the contemporary dance scene, and I feel like I learned so much about French and about sort of living in French by continuing my dance training within those primarily French institutions. What a wonderful scene it is, the contemporary dance scene in Montreal. So that's my very winding path.
Absolutely. Are you finding uses for your French in kind of predominantly Anglophone environment here in BC?
Well, I've only been back in BC now for about a year and a half. So not as much as I'd like. And I think I'm a little gun shy anytime I have the opportunity as well. I'm trying to seek out opportunities where that's really the focus going into the room, as I'm going to practice my French and just try to bring it to the surface a little bit more.
Are there things that you love about being bilingual, and do you find anything difficult about it?
Well, you know what's so interesting, Catherine, is I really struggle with that word bilingual. Like, I really wonder, you know, at what point, similarly, the word fluency, I find
Yes.
quite tricky. And I'm sure people say all the time, oh, I have such imposter syndrome with, you
Yeah.
know, calling myself bilingual or saying I'm fluent in my second language. So I was actually talking to my friend Lena. She's German. She's from Germany, and she's, you know, very recently come to sort of living her whole life in English. And is she really learned English quite quickly? And I said to her, do you feel like you're fully bilingual, or do you feel like you're fluent in English at this point? And she said, no, which I found so fascinating, because, you know, we speak in English all the time, and I don't feel like that being her second language is any impediment to our communication in any way. We may use different words for things, but I thought that was so interesting. She said, you know, I still think in German and I dream in German. So I don't feel like I'm fluent yet. So all that to say, I feel the same way around the word bilingual. I'm not sure if I will ever feel confident enough to really label myself with that, but I do love the opportunity it provides to engage in conversations with more people and to engage with people on their terms, and to enter into their space and their world a little bit if they are French speakers or if they are a speaker, you know, in a different language that you also have some conversational ability in.
I guess maybe proficiency is a
Yeah.
better word for some people for sure. Because yeah, I guess it is true. You may just never be quite as good as you are in your original language in any other language.
And I think it has so much to do with sort of that internal confidence. Like, I don't know if I'll ever get rid of that sort of anxious feeling when I need to prime myself to speak French, right? So yeah, that's one of those things where it's a very internal feeling. So I don't know if it matters at all at the end of the day, but it's definitely there for sure.
Probably having a second language has opened up your mind a bit and made you a more creative person. You alluded a little bit to your time in the Montreal dance scene.
I do think there's different conversations happening in, you know, English theater spaces versus French theater spaces. I would say that the dance community there is predominantly French, and it has a different flavor than the dance community in Toronto for sure. And that's partly because those scenes are connected to different touring networks, right? There's a lot of French and Western European companies that frequently tour through Montreal who don't come to Toronto, and you have a wider range of aesthetic experiences if you're comfortable entering both of those spheres, I find. So I do feel like my artistic experiences have been incredibly enriched by being able to dwell in both of those spaces.
I know you've done some journalism and some radio. Was any of that in French, or has it mostly been in English?
I was with CBC Radio, so the English side, not Radio-Canada. But it's interesting when you are working in current affairs in Montreal. I was working out of the CBC Montreal office primarily as a Zosky intern, and you do need to do some of your research phone calls in French and some of your other story sourcing and prospecting in French. And that was one of those moments where you'd always have that slight anxiety when you go to dial a number because you don't know which language to switch into based on the person on the other side of the phone when you're doing those initial calls just to find out if they have anything to say, you know, about the story at hand. Yeah. And then, I mean, some shows that I worked on, I did spend a little bit of time with CBC Music that was based out of that office at the time. And of course, Radio 2 does some programming on both sides, but primarily in English. Thank goodness. I do feel like my proficiency is not high enough to be a working journalist in French. I can say
Yeah,
that for
that's
sure.
understandable. You'd have to be pretty good. Are there other languages you're interested in pursuing?
That's a great question. Well, you've mentioned that I spend a lot of time in the dance space. And for a time, I really thought learning German would be fantastic. And then I could just hang out in Berlin and see all of the postmodern dance and theater that I wanted. So German's definitely up there. I have dabbled in Duolingo Italian. I think that would be a great place to visit. I do enjoy learning languages. So I think, you know, now that I've got some proficiency in French. It's just a matter of focusing and picking one and having some discipline and seeing it through a little bit more. I'm one of those people where I just want to do everything all at once, all the time. So I do need to focus in a little bit. So I'm glad you asked me that question because it has forced me to think about which one is next. I'm curious though, Catherine, do you speak any languages beyond French as well in English?
Well, actually, my French is pretty rudimentary. I have been learning with Duolingo for a few years, but you know, I tell people I'm probably at a grade 6 level or something. So I got
well,
a few
maybe
years
we'll
to
have,
go.
Maybe we'll have to go grab a tea and start practicing here and there.
I actually find that I can write and read reasonably, but yeah, my spoken French, because I don't really practice it with anybody, is pretty weak.
But yeah, practicing is hard here in BC for sure. I'm really grateful for AFCO and I've yet to take advantage of a lot of their programs, but I certainly hope to do so soon.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, people, you know, people that speak the language, you know, often speak quite fast because that's how people speak, but I can't always follow that fast. So, but eventually I have high hopes that eventually, you know, I'll be, you know, well, proficient in some way.
I know we're coming up on time here, but I do have to share that that's when I started to feel like I was really quite proficient in French. It's when I would say a few words or you know, have a very brief conversation with someone in a shop. And then they would start speaking very quickly on the assumption that I was Francophone. I thought, okay, great. This is where I've
you
sort
have
of
arrived.
Leveled up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to say, oh, plus lentement, s'il vous plaît. Actuellement, je suis anglophone, désolé, très désolé. But I thought, oh, that's such a funny moment, actually, when so being someone from within theater and within those kinds of spaces, you know, I feel like my accent is probably better than, I shouldn't say that after I just said a few words there that were probably totally off the mark. But you know, when you're totally immersed in that environment, I feel like
right.
I could ape the sound and the rhythm more than all the granularities of the grammar. So that was such an interesting moment for me.
That was my conversation with Callie Linz, who lives in Nelson, BC. You've been listening to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, hosted and produced by Catherine Fisher. The podcast celebrates March, the month of the Francophonie, and it was made possible by the Dialogue Foundation, which has a mission to engage in a sustainable dialogue within the Francophonie and with all of Canada's diversity. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération de la Jeunesse Canadienne Française, NAF Canada, and many other groups, including the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. You just heard an episode of Rendezvous de la Francophonie. You can go to rvf.ca for more information. Excuse me. And now we're going to hear most of Level, the Story by Compander, a New Brunswick-based electronic artist who did an exercise of writing music for different levels or themes or biomes as part of the project called Level, and then decided to make a little radio play to accompany it all. So we're going to hear most of that. This is The Story from Level by Compander, and up next is Democracy Now!
Once upon a time, in a wooded glen, a small cottage gave shelter to a robot and its grandbird. This little robot was known in their village to make particularly good time, and of many different types as well, all in high demand in the village market, until one fateful day.
By order of the council, you are to provide your time immediately.
It's okay, grandbot. I'm sure this won't take long.
But alas, this was not the case. Influential forces had plans for our little one.
The village reservoirs of time are very nearly depleted. On the other side of the woods that border our village, you will find a vast desert. You will cross this desert until you arrive at the Sea of Time. As your predecessor before you, you will harvest a lifetime to refill the village reservoirs, keeping a modest amount for your wares, of course.
Please, no, not my little one. We already have so little time left. It's okay, Grandbot. I will do my duty and be back in no time.
Only time would tell if this were true. And the poor little bot really had no idea what they were in store for.
Heart on your journey, so even in the darkest moments, my light will guide you.
Grandbot transferred her radiant cardioid to the Time Maker's system, locking her hope sequences in a loop. And so our intrepid hero and their Grandbot consoled one another as best they could from relative safety, before crossing the first threshold. All as the village cheered their departure. Smiling with iron in the belly, our hero walks forward to the unknown. A safe return uncertain. Returning unchanged. Impossible.
I've never been past the forest border before. And the Time Maker before me vanished long before installing the most up-to-date time harvesting programs. What am I doing? What if I fail? What will become of me?
Foreboding and fascinating, the forest appeared much different from within than from without.
The forest is here. The division is clear and I am to breach the border. To the wooded dread and wonder.
Encountered in the forest were evaded easily with a simple trick of time, giving the little bot a newfound confidence from the experience. While the woods were indeed an unknown to the little bot was also unknown to the woods. And with this realization, even more confidence was garnered. As our hero emerges from the woods into a clearing, the moon sets before them on a featureless horizon. From behind, the rising sun gives the newly explored woods a halo, a warm reminder of home.
It's not too late. I could easily turn back and I know Grandbot would be ever so relieved. But I am duty-bound to find the Sea of Time and return before the village's machine permanence runs out of time.
Yes, forward lies the fortune. Beyond the shimmering, wavering desert, looming ahead, where new unknowns await.
The sun has barely breached the horizon and my cooling fans are already kicking into gear. I hope I'm up for this.
As the Time Maker left all familiarity behind, the first grains of the desert sands ahead made their way into the little bot's joints and seals.
Which will overrun me first, I wonder? The sizzling air. Or the invasive particulates?
By step, the little Time Maker trudged on, through the scouring, scorching sands, over dunes and past jutting, skeletal pillars of stone, festooned with carvings of twin cities divided by a great sea. Onward into a valley free of shadows. Stone oven and the hiss of heat. When through the curtains of rippling air, a serpent's words appear.
Young hero, you do not know what you are doing, entering this domain. If you are fool enough to part with your time, I will gladly take it for myself.
The serpent's strikes were a blur, but the little bot had time to dodge. Exhausted, the serpent gave up its efforts, as well as a single scale, which the Time Maker collects before moving on.
Clever trick I've seen before. Take your trophy, little Time Maker. May it shield your weaknesses in a scaled fashion.
As if awaking from a trance, the Time Maker realizes a cool sea breeze is cleaving the thick and humid air ahead. Visual sensors get the impression of an infinite shoreline on the horizon. As the bot slowly makes their way closer and closer to the lapping waves, the desert carvings continue to haunt.
In the dividing sea, between the ring cities, there was a small, dark spiral. Within the spiral, a figure, and the sea itself seemed to be drawn to this dark locus. I'm tasked with supplying my village with enough time. And I now have all the time in the world laid out before me. If I could take it all.
Mysteries within, compelling desires without. The Sea of Time presented the bot with a choice. Now at the lapping shores, the initial quest was at hand. But in the end, the images depicted in the desert carvings beckoned the bot into the pulsing tide of time itself. Further forward. And down. Into a world devoid of light. Light.
journey, the little dot sunk deeper and deeper, until darkness threatened to consume all natural light. Just then, Grandbot's radiant cardioid became brighter than ever, streaming out of the Time Maker's eyes, revealing a vast, sunken civilization, ringed in stone, looming up from the darkness below.
So this is the twin of my village, and what my village once looked like. Before the sea retreated from one and drowned the other, could it be? Maybe these ruins hold the answers.
And so the little Time Maker explored the sunken ruins of the Stone City. The little bot instinctively found their way to the home of the sunken city's Time Maker. In this Time Maker's journal, our hero learned that long ago, a shadowy figure in a dark spiral brought the Sea of Time's unimaginable weight to the Stone City, burying the civilization under infinity. Before succumbing themselves, this city's Time Maker identified the figure in the spiral as the Forest City's Time Maker, but in a crazed state of unfettered greed. They demanded the Stone City relinquish its time, even as it pulled the sea behind it, over it, into it. Never satisfied, the corrupted Time Maker sank into the Stone City's deepest time reservoirs, where it languishes to this day, trapped under the weight of its own infinite consumption.
You off before the thrilling climax and conclusion. Ooh, there's my timer of Level, the story by Compander here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. You can go to compander.bandcamp.com to hear the whole thing, to listen to the instrumental only version, and then just get the thrilling conclusion of the story. We have it on a cool cassette that is designed to look like a Super Nintendo cartridge, which is super fun. This has been Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. You can find other episodes and more information about our programming at cjsf.ca. And if you want to get involved, you can get in touch with our volunteer coordinator, Juju, at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. Democracy Now! Is up right now. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm